Hey, BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hey, I'm Tiffany.
What's up, guys? It's Mandy.
And this is Brown Ambition. Hey, Mandra, how you been?
I've been good. I've been enjoying this little teaser of spring weather, although winter is already back and driving me insane.
Yeah, winter, it's definitely giving us, what's that thing you guys watch that I don't watch?
Game of Thrones.
Yes. Oh, but you know what? You'll be proud of me. This is a little aside because I see the new Game of Thrones is coming out soon, right? The last one?
Yeah, April 14th. But you know, who's counting?
And I felt like I ought to know at least some basics of what's happening. There's actually this really great YouTube channel called Cram. I think it's I don't know if it's K or C. Either way. So he crams each season into like a 20 to like 30, 35 minute explanation. And I feel like I know things.
Oh, okay. That's useful. That's a challenge.
It was really good, honestly, because I was bored one night. I could not go to sleep. And I said, you know what? I feel like I'm never going to watch Game of Thrones because, I mean, let's be real. I'm so behind. But so I watched the first season and I was like, okay, the first season crammed. It was like I said, like 30 minutes. And I said, okay, Daenerys Targaryen. Okay. Just, you know, poor Ned with his head cut off. Got it.
Spoiler alert. Damn.
If you haven't watched the first season, it's already, just watch crammed.
I mean, there's a lot of heads that get cut off, so.
Yeah. But it was so good. And I was like, oh, I can see why you guys like it. Although I am not sitting down to watch 8 seasons of so many episodes. But I felt really proud of myself because I feel like when the new season comes out, because Superman does watch Game of Thrones. And now I feel like I can watch with him and not be like, who's that? What's that? What's going on? Yeah. I'm like, I know things. I was like, oh, wait till I tell Mandra. I be knowing stuff.
You know, no, there's just so much content out there. I don't blame anybody I spent this weekend, I thought I was going to binge Queer Eye, which I did watch a few episodes. Do you watch Queer Eye on Netflix?
No, there's too many things to watch.
I know, there's so much, but like this show will just make you just want to hug a puppy and just be so happy. They're just such a fun, like, little show. You don't have to binge it. You can just watch little sprinkles of it. But I had to, I like forced myself to get out of the house and enjoy the sunshine. So I was quite feeling myself for just enjoying. We did a lot of yard work and took Molly to the dog park, which she wasn't a fan of. Little Molly is an introvert like her mommy.
Oh, she didn't like the dog park.
She's introverted. It was just too much stimulation for her. You know, all these extroverted dogs trying to sniff her butt and, you know, play with her.
But I don't know you.
Exactly. It was too much for her. So it was a little sensory overload. And we came home and we just made our backyard a nice little place for her to relax. And it was funny because her real personality started coming out and she was having a good time.
I saw your IG story. I thought it was so cute when you were chasing her. She was like, catch me. Okay, no, pet me. I thought that was so adorable.
Yeah, she walks herself now. It's awesome. Just in the backyard.
I love that. Is she going to get much bigger? Do you know like how big her, like, her breed or whatever normally gets?
No, this is it. She's a little over a year old, like a year and a half. And she's fully grown. So she's like the perfect little size. Yeah, she's mixed. She's a Labrador, but she's mixed with something small, like a type of terrier that's small. So we got really lucky because she's got all the personality of a lab, but not the huge size. Like if you look at her next to a full size Labrador, like a purebred, she's like one third of their size.
Yeah, she's a great size. Oh, yeah. Look, mixed girl got a mixed baby, mixed puppy.
I know, my little mutt. And she's black and white too, but you know, on the nose.
I love that. Yeah. Oh, yeah, she's adorable. You almost make almost. I'm like, oh, I want to pet a dog.
I honestly, the mental health boost from having a dog in my life, because I've been wanting a dog for, I would have had a dog years ago if it wasn't for waiting for my partner to be on the same page. It's really frustrating. But finally, we got one. But I grew up with dogs, and I feel like she had, yes, there's sort of the maintenance of having an animal or whatever that, you know, you have to like plan your life around them a little bit. But I think that's good practice for having a kid, for one. And then two, just the mental health benefit. I mean, I'm just so much happier. And she's also forcing me to get out of the house. Like I get up at 7 a.m. and go on a 1.5 mile walk that I never would have taken, you know, before. And I think that she's just had so many benefits, just even just being in my life for a few weeks, that I'm not going back. I'm always going to have a dog.
Yeah, honestly, they say, you know, animal. I mean, that's why you see sometimes they have like a animal kind of like program at like elder homes and stuff like that, because it's just helpful. I remember when I had a, I mean, I know a cat's not the same, but I was so geek with my parents because they were like, no, you can't have this. No, you can't have that. But they felt like a cat was something that was fairly easy. And cats are fairly easy to take care of because they're so independent. And honestly though, but it made my day and also made me so responsible, because like I was responsible for her vet bill. You know, I was responsible for feeding her and making sure that she had like, you know, wherever she was going to go to the bathroom. But it was just like nice to have, I mean, although cats don't give you the same kind of love, it was nice to have like this living, you know, living cute little creature, just kind of like, I love you too. I mean, although cats are like, I love you too, I guess.
They bless you with their presence. Is this the same cat that you said ended up living with the neighbors?
Yes. Well, I mean, to be fair, we did leave her kind of high and dry, but still.
Tell me about that responsibility again.
I know. Yeah. My dad was like, oh, well. I was like, no, the neighbors. She's like, the thing about a cat, it's not like a dog. We're like, I'm going to get my cat and bring it back. Like, we tried. And the cat was like, girl, I don't live with you anymore. I'm still going across the street. So, you know, but it was cute of her to let us know, like meowing out the window. Can you imagine the gall for us to walk by and for her to meow and be like, hey, girl, with her new collar on? I was like, so this is where you live now. And you're just letting me know, I'm good. Don't worry. I get fed here. I was like, you know what? It's fine. Cinder. I wonder what they even call her.
She had to do what was best for her, you know, her best life.
Her best. When I tell you her best, because my dad was definitely not for an inside cat. I'm like, daddy, they're not outside. You know, like they need to be inside. He's like, no. So I used to just have to sneak her inside. But she's like, but here, you know, they love me inside. So I'm sure she's still living. I mean, if she's still alive, because I mean, she was.
You mean she found some white people?
Yeah. Because Africans were like, animals do not belong inside. Yeah. No animals inside. I was like, daddy. It's cold. So if you weren't here, what would she do? She would figure it out like that.
Exactly.
Any new exciting things coming up?
Oh, man. Not really. We aren't taking any. I don't even want to go there. It's very sad. No trips for this. No trips for this quarter of my life. But I am planning. I decided this is the last year when I'm like the only person not traveling in August. I'm just sitting at work getting everybody's out of office bounce backs. So I'm finally going to get my life together and plan a trip for August. Yeah, but I'm going to see my dad in April and see my mom in April. So I am, you know, putting my family first.
Well, that's good. I'm beach. Taking 2 weeks. I mean, I'm not going to like travel necessarily, although I am interested in maybe doing like a road trip somewhere. I feel like I've always wanted to go to like Rhode Island, even though I feel like Superman is going to be like
Rhode Island.
I don't know. I want to see like someplace with beautiful houses. Don't they have beautiful houses in Rhode Island?
I mean, I don't know. Growing pains?
I don't know. I want to do like a road trip somewhere.
Taylor Swift lives there.
But I want to, you know, someplace where it's like not too far. You know what? I don't even know if I'm going to do a road trip, because I forgot Superman can't even drive long distances. Ever since his aneurysm surgery, it's like he's not able to drive long distances. Oh. So that means it's all me. I know, which sucks, because he used to love driving and I don't like driving. So now I'm the designated driver always, there and back. He's like, sorry, babe, I'll just stay awake. Here's the thing about me. If you're driving and I'm the passenger, I'm not staying awake.
Yeah, ditto.
I can't do it.
My husband just like pinches me until I wake up. I'm like, that's just not fair. Why can't I enjoy life?
I'm the worst. I'm like, I'm sorry, but like, God forbid you are driving with me. I'm like, you better not close your eyes. You keep me company. But yeah, so I'm hoping maybe we'll do like a little So I'm going to take the first 2 weeks off in April just because and what I mean off, just like no work, just woosah. You know, the house is just about finished. We're like literally like tile and refinishing the floor and like painting. So like any week now we'll be finally done. So I'll just spend time bugging the contractors in there, like to the left, to the right.
Have I not seen any reno pictures? Where are you chronicling this experience?
Yeah, I just stopped because I was like, it was depressing for me because I would always be like, this is the week. This is not the week. So I'm like, at the end.
We want the ugly truth.
I'll do the big reveal at the end.
Okay, fine.
So I've been taking pictures, but, and honestly, it, like the other day, I thought Superman was going to cry because he was like, this is even better than my wildest dreams. And I'm not going to lie. Now that the like tile has gone in, me too. I'm like, wow. My designer, Rihanna, she and her, so like I said, they're like a Chip and Joanna, husband, wife design, kind of like construction team. Her husband's name is Jermaine. And so they have a company called Remain. Isn't that cute? Remain, R-E-M-A-I-N, Remain Homes. And so sometimes Rihanna would like, you know, because I'm really conservative in like my design choices. She's like, well, why not look at this? Or why not try this? And what about this? And I'd be like, no. But now that everything's getting put in, I'm like, oh my goodness. It looks amazeballs. I'm not even going to lie. Like, I can't believe this is going to be our house. I feel like the best advice I got from someone was from my business partner, Jabril. He said, Tiffany, when I first started, like, you know, doing the renovations, he said, do not budget niece to the house. And I was like, and I knew what he meant. He was like, basically, I'm someone who does I take delayed gratification too far. And I'm always like, the next time, the next one, the next one. And so he was like, you know, you work really hard. You deserve to have a beautiful place to live and stay. And, you know, like, and you spend a lot of time at home because you work from home. So just like get the things that you want. I mean, obviously, you know, don't put yourself in financial harm's way, but get the things that you want. And so I listened to that and I'm so happy because I really don't think we're going to be moving anytime soon.
Yeah. I mean, and you also think about what you want to come home to.
Yes.
And what will make you feel relaxed. And yeah, I had the same kind of conversations with my husband about really investing in the spaces that were most important and where we spent most of our time so that we could really, yeah, just be happy and feel like if you're living in the house for 10 years or whatever, that it's a place that you want to come home to. And at a certain point, forgetting about like a little bit about the resale value and will you recoup the investment? No, you're not going to recoup everything, but
yeah,
you know, the investment in your mental health and like your space for your family. It's exciting. I can't wait.
It is. And also too, like, you know, it's not like, you know, I'm not some spendaholic. So it's like, Tiffany, it's okay to spend a little bit of money, Like, you know, it's okay to get the marble instead of the ceramic tile here. It's okay, girl. The extra $200. It's okay.
Treat you know, yourself.
So exactly. And so, yeah, I can't wait. Honestly. Yeah. So when I really feel like it's going to be like less than a month. Well, the shell will be done. Like, you know, we won't have all of our furniture stuff because we're still ordering. Because most of the furniture that we live with now is like my husband's like bachelor furniture. And he's like, what about this? I'm like, babe, what part of almost everything is staying? Don't you understand? I don't want your bachelor furniture. And anything that you want to take with us, that's what the man cave is for. He's so sick of me saying. He's like, the man cave, right? I'm like, you got it.
Just put that on the box.
Exactly. Put that in the man cave. And so he's excited about his man cave, boy. He's like, yes, I'm going to be able to watch the game loud. I'm going to be able to have my friends over. So our compromise was he could do whatever he wants in the man cave as far as decorations. You know, because I don't really particularly care for his sense of style and color. And then I get the rest of the house. Even though sometimes he's like, ooh, I think we should put, I'm like, remember the rule. So he does get one veto. One like, absolutely not. I don't want, you know, whatever. But for the most part, I mean, you know, because my husband's like, he likes really bold, loud colors in a house. And I don't. I'm more of a neutral. And maybe like the furniture or like the pillows be a little bit bold, not the wall color. Like literally, we have a burgundy wall in our house, an orange wall, a green wall. Let me see what other colors we have. Those colors don't go together. In our current apartment, not in our house. In our apartment. Oh, no, there was that was not happening in the house. I was like, absolutely not. So like burgundy, orange, green. I mean, when I tell you we have so many colors, we have some trim that's chocolate brown. Why is there chocolate brown trim? Why is that even a thing? So I told him he's not allowed to crack his lips to make any color choices. except for in the basement where you can go crazy, son. You could make this place as wildly colorful as you like because no one's coming down here. This belongs to you. He's like, okay, fine.
All right, BA fam, y'all know when it comes to financial advice, you have to trust your source. That's why you listen to Brown Ambition, right? And when I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. I've been a longtime fan of NerdWallet. In fact, I almost worked there a couple of times because when it comes to financial experts and writing, they really know how to give you the best reviews of financial products. I honestly wouldn't sign up for a credit card today if I hadn't looked at a review on a site like NerdWallet myself. And honestly, if y'all haven't learned about NerdWallet, you're missing out. And with their help, what could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms of each credit card issuer apply. Okay, I've got to. I was trying to find a way to segue to the headline for the show today, which is auto loan debt, but I didn't achieve it. So we're just gonna jump right in. Yay, auto loan debt. So this is something that over the years we've covered. I've always covered like auto loan debt. You know, auto loan debt has been rising, and what you hear when people say, you know, are we reaching crisis status with auto loans debt in America? Is it as bad as the subprime mortgage crisis? You know, that precipitated the recession? Is it as bad as a student loan debt crisis? And the answer's always been no, you know, because delinquency rates for auto loans haven't always been that bad. And the reason people, experts will say, is because people need their cars. Like, they're always going to pay their car note because they need it to get to and from their actual job. So it's one of these things that while debt has been increasing, people haven't been as worried because it hasn't become this whole source of delinquency. But I find auto loan debt in America, the numbers that we have in our most recent lending tree analysis of auto loan debt just caught me off guard. And I wanted to spend some time talking about auto loan debt and about the car culture that we have in this country and how I genuinely feel like if people were less willing to take on so much debt for their cars, they could so much easier achieve other financial goals that they have in life. Like how you read those studies all the time that say that Americans can't scrounge up $400 for an emergency. Well, the average auto loan in America, the average car note in America is over $500.
I'm not shocked. Remember, I told you that story about Superman had a $900 car note when I met him.
Oh, God.
Remember?
And I forgot it was that much.
And then that didn't include insurance. And I was like, so this is your house. You live, this is a mortgage. And you live in this house. And his excuse was because he worked for the city of Newark, the site that he lived on, because he was like on call, he didn't have to pay rent. So he was like, I can splurge on my car because I'm not paying rent. And I was like, so what happens one day if they're like, psych, you know, we're going to eliminate the on call part and ask you to pay rent? And he's like, well, and I was like really adamant about it. And so he actually had to surrender his car. I'm back because I'm like, it's just too high. It doesn't make sense. It's too high. He had a Denali, one of those big trucks, you know, or whatever the current year was. And so he did. And sure enough, 2 months later, after he did that, they took away that part of his position and he had to pay rent. And he was like, and you know, I didn't want to say I told you so, but I said, I told you so.
You told him so.
But I just remember, I'm not going to lie, you know, Mandy, up until then, I didn't even know car loans could get as high as $900.
Yeah, I mean, that's like a mortgage payment. That's crazy.
Not like it is a mortgage payment. I'm like, how does a salesperson in good conscience sell you that.
They don't have a conscience. That's not part of their job. They, when you walk into the dealership, and this is a mistake so many people, and we'll get into the numbers in a minute, but the mistake so many people make when they walk into the dealership is they go in with the kind of car that they want. And all they want the dealer to tell them they can have it. And the dealer is more than happy to pull strings behind the scenes, getting you all kinds of financing from their lender partners to make that happen. Because, of course, dealers get a kickback from the lenders in their network and the financing office for selling you the biggest loan possible. They get a percentage of that. So, of course, they're going to want to get you approved. But let's talk a little bit about like the crisis itself, which I'm going to call it a crisis. Maybe, you know, economists don't agree with me, but these numbers were really outstanding to me. So let's start with the big picture. Right now, Americans have over $1.14 trillion worth of auto loan debt. Let that sink in. That's up 23% than the year 2013. Right now, auto loans account for about 8% of outstanding consumer debt. Generation X, if we can get down to like age level, Gen Xers, I'm talking to you, not you, Tiff, because you're an exception. Gen Xers out of any generation carry the highest auto loan balances with a median of $18,700. But the average, let's focus on this for a second. The average amount that people are borrowing for a new car in the US is nearly $30,000, which is $5,000 more than we were borrowing as a country for new cars just a decade ago. Ouch.
That's crazy for a car, not student loans, not a home, but a car.
A car. For used cars, slightly better, but still nearly $20,000. That was the average new car loan at the end of 2018. And what's like another shocking statistic from this finding is that people with good credit actually take out higher auto loans. Like they're more likely to take out the big auto loans. So I mentioned the average new car loan, according to our analysis, is about $31,000. If you have a good credit score, excellent credit score, you're taking out nearly $33,000 for a new car and nearly $22,000 for a used car.
Because you don't feel it. You're like, woohoo, I've got good credit. My interest rate is lower. So your payment might be the same as someone who borrowed less. You know, but so you're just like, either way, we're both paying $500, but it's like, no, sis, at the end of the day, you're going to end up paying more.
Yeah. And when you compare like the rates on auto loans to like, say, a credit card, it does look like a better deal. Okay. So yeah, I've got $30,000 on an auto loan, but my interest rate's only 5%, for example, or the average rate in America right now is 7%. Yeah, that sounds a lot better than, you know, a credit card, which the average rate is about 15 or 16% now. That's true. However, the problem is that the length of terms that people are getting, so the amount of time they sign up to pay back their auto loans, is only getting longer. So even just in the last quarter of 2018, the length of auto loan terms increased by half a month. So right now, people are taking out loans for an average 68 and a half months, which is, what is that, over 6 years, or nearly 6 years. And what happens is, yeah, that 7% APR doesn't seem that bad, but you add that up over a six-year period and you're adding thousands and thousands of dollars to the original cost of your car, which is a depreciating asset in the first place. So the value is going down, but your loan bill is going up because of this interest that's accruing. And for me, I just don't see the – and I'm judgy-wudgy was a bear. I know. I sound very like judgy and preachy. But I, you know, even if you have to – like you have to look at a car note, for me it was always – an extra expense that I in my mind was taking away from something else that I could do with that, you know, $300, $400 a month. And when my husband and I, we live in New York City, we didn't necessarily need a car for a long time, but finally we needed one when we were moving out of the city. And when we were looking at cars, we would fight about this, you know, what kind of car to get, how much to borrow. And for me, it was about getting a reliable car. Of course you want a reliable car. But I was at a minimum wanting like a certified pre-owned car.
Yes.
So at least you're walking away with a car that's already had its depreciation. You know, it's been driven off the lot. Someone else paid for it, and now you're getting it at a lower price. But it's still, you know, reliable because it's not that old. And then I wanted to aggressively pay it off as quickly as I could because I just didn't want this to be a line item on my budget that was taking away from other goals that I had. So I'm speaking from experience, and I wanted to open up the conversation just to talk about it and also challenge our listeners to look at how much they're spending on their car. Like, go to, and I'll share a link to this interest loan calculator in the show notes. So you can actually punch in how much your auto loan note is, how many months you have left, and your interest rate, and see in black and white how much money you're going to spend in interest over the years. And you might think differently about that car itself. And maybe think about taking to the extreme, like with Superman, he surrendered his car, you said, or he sold it. What did he do with his car?
He surrendered. So, well, basically they bought it back, you know, but he still owed a little bit on it, you know, so, because depreciation. So I can't remember. Let's just say the car was like $40,000 and they bought it back for like $30,000 or $35,000 or whatever. And he had already made whatever amount of payments. So there might have been, I think there was probably like a $4,000 difference or $3,000 or $4,000 difference. And so he actually took out like a low or no interest loan from his credit union. And, you know, and then paid that, paid the dealership, and then paid his credit union back. I think it took about 6 months to pay the credit union back. And then we had no car, but we also had no car debt. So
that's a good point, is when you, because it's the asset itself, the car is decreasing in value while you, especially if you put down a low down payment, and people who have good credit, excellent credit, you can qualify for those 0%, you know, down, no down payment car loans that actually exist and are out there if you have excellent credit. But that means you're just taking on more loan debt. And that means that if you get in a situation where you want to sell that car or you can't afford the payments anymore and you try and sell it or surrender it, you know, or back to the lender, then you may be underwater, which means that you owe, like your loan is worth more than the car actually is anymore. So that's what happens when you don't put down a sufficient down payment on a car, which is, I think, recommended to, the classic 20% rule. Put down a healthy down payment to at least cover whatever that first year's depreciation is to put you in a position where you're not like underwater.
And so, you know, obviously he lives and he learns, but I'm not going to lie. It took a long time for him to get it because like he wanted his truck back so bad. Cause you know, my husband is tall. So, your husband is tall, you know, they love that idea of a truck, don't they?
Tesla. If I hear the word Tesla one more time, and he will not to this day, Tesla, he points it out in the street. I'm like, we are not getting a $60,000, whatever it is, like car. We have no car debt. I'm like, that's a good place to be. Look at this thing in my driveway. It's an asset to me. I sell it. I own the title. I get the cash. You know, that's to me an asset. And I look at that as an extra, you know, $500 we can be putting toward our savings or vacation, the house. You know, people want to say, how did you get a house? Yes, there's other, you know, I've obviously been saving for a long time, but I think being so hell-bent on not accruing a lot of unnecessary debt also helped.
Yeah, I think that that's the thing that worries me about folks the most. You know, what we do with financial education is that I don't think that there's enough hesitancy on creating new debt. Doesn't that seem strange, right? That people like will literally have, and I'm not judging, I mean, because I've been here, you know, you'll sign up for a couch bill, a TV bill, a blender bill. And so that's anytime you swipe your card for like, oh, I'm going to buy this, I'm going to buy that. And without the intention of paying it off in full when the bill comes, you have like, now you have a dress bill and a comforter bill. And so accruing all of this debt. And I mean, it was one of the things like when I guess it's because like, you know, just from my dad and growing up and just being like really preached to about the dangers of debt, that one of the things I did when I moved out was really to be mindful of, is this going to add an additional debt to my monthly, you know, my monthly payments? And just being like, well, how can I get the thing? So I always think this, how can I get the thing without the monthly payment? You know, does that mean waiting? Does that mean saving? I mean, the car that I have now, you know, like it's much nicer, but every car I've never had a car note. First car I think I bought for like under $5,000. I moved home right after college. I save. And I bought that car from like a used car lot or the auction. And it was in, you know, good condition. It was maybe like 3 or 4 years old. It was a 99 Nissan Altima. And I rolled that car. It had 216,000 miles on it.
Damn.
And it was still going strong because, you know, Altimas will last forever. And then someone actually, I had that car parked outside of my parents' house and someone crashed into it and destroyed it. And then the insurance company, shocker, which I was actually shocked at, gave me $4,000 for it. because it was and so with that 4,000, you know what I did? I went back to the I went to my mechanic, had a used car. He had at the time a 99 Camry, which by then that was like a 10-year-old car. And so because it was like 2009 by then. So I bought the Camry and I rode that Camry up until 2 years ago. And that Camry had almost 200,000 miles on it. And then I had saved enough because I knew the Camry was like, the Camry didn't last as long as the Altima. And I knew it was like on its last leg. So I had been saving. And now I've got a I don't know, like a 2017 a Lincoln MKZ. And so when I bought the Lincoln, it was like a year and a half old to 2 years old. So that was significantly more. The first car was 5,000, second car was 4. The Lincoln, I think they wanted like 26 or 27,000, but I had cash, so I paid 22,000. But it was, like you said, Mandy, to your point, it was certified pre-owned. And thank God, because there were some issues with the Lincoln that, like, you know, I guess came before I knew. And so, and I've gotten that car fixed a couple of times. They actually had to like almost like rebuild my engine because something happened to it. And I was like, that's not my problem. I bought a certified pre-owned. Y'all should have checked it. So they basically gave me a brand new engine and it cost me nothing because it was certified pre-owned. And so, like, you know, for the first time in like a long time, I have like a decent looking car because the other cars were not cute, but I have a decent looking car, but I also don't have a car note. And it's the same way we bought our houses. I know everyone can't buy a house and a car in cash, but you know, one of the things I think about when it comes to money is this going to add an additional payment to my life, and can it be avoided? Can it be avoided through patience? Can it be avoided through savings? Can it be avoided through strategic, like, you know, strategically managing my money? And sometimes it can't be. Like, I went to school and I had my you know, student loans, I couldn't avoid it. But there are areas in your life that you can avoid adding another payment to your list because it eats away at your day to day. And like, I don't know, I don't, you know, like despite Superman and I being like grown, I think I want to say, Mandy, that our collective bills for, I mean, this doesn't include like what we do to help family members. Last time I checked, it was like $2,500 is how much our life costs us with groceries, with bills, with everything for two adults and a Supergirl. $2,500, that's it. Because I'm mindful of like collecting bills. And so I encourage that of you. Yes, as the budgetista, I make way more money, but I was doing that when I was a preschool teacher making next to nothing. Mm-hmm. So it's possible at different levels of life, but you have to be mindful and you have to be willing not to have, you know, what everyone else seems to have up front. And being okay with that. Like, I had to learn not to put so much stock in, like, not to put so much stock in stuff, you know?
Yeah. I mean, my husband comes from like a Dominican family, and the car culture is, it's a status symbol. When we got our little pre-owned, certified pre-owned, you know, Mazda CX-5 a couple years ago, his mother wanted him to like take her to bingo, drive her around the neighborhood so they can see how, you know, how successful her son is in the car. And, you know, that's just like a toxic, it's that pressure to get what you can't afford. You know, but come on, we're all grown ups or anyway, and you should be able to resist the temptation and just don't think about what you can't have, think about what you can save if you were, you know, less, I don't know, just more willing to buy a car that's not as expensive, or maybe even a car that you can pay, you know, 50% down and then have a lower car note. People need cars. Like, I'm not an idiot. My mom raised 4 kids. She needed a car to get around, but she drove that beat up Windstar minivan for like a long ass time, you know? And I understand that people need cars. But you don't need to take out $30,000 worth of debt to get one. And let's switch for a second, because people are borrowing money for cars at an increasing rate, but they're also getting financing from the dealer at an alarming rate too, which is like, I wish I could just stand outside of every car dealership and just say no, or just like, come here, don't come until you've got your own financing. But here are some numbers. So for new cars, nearly or over 50% of people buying new cars are getting their financing at the dealership. And this is the new car financing, again, is that's $31,000 for a new car you're financing at the dealer. For used cars, most people are actually getting their financing from a bank, which is good. I wonder if that's because people who buy used cars are already thinking of how to save money. Yes. And are more likely to go to the bank to do so. Yeah. So let's talk about like what happens when you go to the dealership. If you have not already shopped around and gotten financing offers from whatever bank you have, your local credit union near you, and you're walking into that dealership, it's going to be difficult for you to walk out without getting the financing, because you're going to fall in love with that car. They're going to try and sell you on all these, you know, bells and whistles. Maybe they'll say no down payment. Maybe they'll say, oh, we'll throw in extended warranty or whatever, or maintenance for a year. And then they're going to get you a dealership, or sorry, a financing deal with one of their lender partners. It's almost always going to be worse than what you could have gotten through a credit union or even just any bank outside of the dealership. So before you go, shop and compare financing deals. I will shout out LendingTree, where you can shop and compare auto loans. Also, you can do it at Magnify Money, or you can just do it your darn self by like going online. My husband and I just went to Lightstream.com, which is a great, you know, online only lender that offers good rates if you've got good credit. We went in with that Lightstream financing offer. I also went to a credit union, USAA, got a financing offer from them too, compared them. Lightstream's was better. And we took our pretty butts down to the used car lot. And this is the thing, like when the dealer saw that we had our own financing, they spent like maybe 20 minutes in the office trying to get their lender, who happened, I think, to be Capital One, to match our rate. I think it was something crazy low. This was a few years ago when rates were a little bit lower. I think it was like 3% or something around there. And they managed to get it like a teeny tiny bit less than what our lender had. But I don't think they would have done that. They definitely wouldn't have had an incentive to had we not shown up with our financing. So bring your own financing, even if you can't pay it off, you know,
immediately. Yes. I'm telling you, like, credit unions are bae too.
Oh, more than bae. Like, I was a little sad to see. So we're talking about new cars. Only 14% of people are going to credit unions. Why? Love your credit union. They're there for you, you know? They're there for you. For used cars, it was a little bit higher again, about 15%, or sorry, even higher, about 30% of people buying used cars are going to their credit union. So people buying used cars clearly have done their research, are buying used cars because they probably know it's not worth it to buy new, and also to bring their own financing to the table. Yes. Only about 9% of people are getting dealer financing when they're buying used cars. So snaps for y'all.
Yes. Come prepared. Do your research. I remember, honestly, so my sister Tracy, she was needing a car because her job was far from where she lived. And she's like, I really can't get like a putt-putt. And I remember telling her like, okay. And I think, you know, I did convince her to get something that was just like a year or so old, not brand new, but definitely not, you know, not old. And then I remember telling her, cause she was like, I told her, bring your own financing. And I sent her to, LendingTree. And she was like, it was just such a great tool to find different places where she could qualify based upon her credit score. I had given her a bunch of questions to ask based upon her credit score to really find the best lender for her. And she felt really confident going in, like, okay, this is the best rate that I'm going to get. I know exactly how much I'm going to borrow. And it just made her feel more confident. I mean, it wasn't ideal. She would have loved to, you know, buy a car in cash, but she was like, I can't get a 5-6 year old car. I'm driving too many miles a day. The car needs to be in like really tip top great condition. And so I was proud of her.
Yeah. I think with our car, our car was like $18,000 and we paid half down. And then the next year we aggressively paid it off until it was gone. And, you know, if I had used the, with our rate being so low, we could have waited longer because, you know, if you have higher interest debt compared to your auto loan, it may make sense. It does make sense to focus on aggressively paying down that debt first. So if you got your auto loan and you've got credit cards that are like 15%, but your auto loan is 6%, it makes sense to throw what you can at your credit card debt first. But don't sleep on the auto loan either. That's
it'll creep up on you.
It will creep up on you. And there's things you can do. So let's say, you know, when you got your auto loan a few years ago, your credit score was not so great and now it's improved. You can look at refinancing, applying for a new loan, using it to pay off your own loan, but at a better rate. You can even refinance it to a shorter term if you can afford the higher payments. And that way you're not paying so much over the life of the loan. Or just, you know, make it one of your challenges to aggressively pay off your auto loan debt in 2019 or in the next couple of years. If you have friends who are just drowning in auto loan debt, you know, talk to them too and see if there's anything they can do to maybe refinance or trade it in. Be careful about trading in. Sometimes you don't usually get the best value for the car that you're trading in. But if you are especially if you're underwater on your auto loan, sometimes you just have to bite the bullet, yep, like Superman did, pay, yep, the difference. That's very smart what he did, like taking out the, it's like he was dating the budgetista or something.
It was under extreme duress.
Taking out the personal loan.
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't happy about it, but now he totally gets it. It's hard.
When he's sitting in that man cave, he'll be happy.
What? It wasn't. I'm telling you, honestly, it wasn't until, like, I would always be afraid when I went away on a business trip that I was going to come back to another truck in the driveway. And it wasn't until that, like, we really started looking for a house that he finally made the connection of us being able to afford a house that we want and how not having this car note made that possible. Then he stopped, because literally, I mean, I would, like, you know how, like, you know, you might look at your man's, like, phone and you're like, oh, you already know, like, the search history might be porn. His search history was trucks. Yeah. I mean, it was crazy. I'm like, you're obsessed. He's like, no, I just feel like and I would literally be like, he's gonna buy a truck. I can't do anything about it. He's gonna randomly buy a truck and put us back, you know, in the dark ages where we were just left from. And like I said, it wasn't until we started going house shopping that he was like, ah, got it. Because at the time we thought we were gonna get a mortgage, and you know, if he would have had a car note, we would have been approved for way less. And it opened up his mind to, like, got it. It's not deprivation of you're not getting a truck. It's you open yourself up to opportunities to be able to get things that mean even more to you than that car. And so now I was like, okay, babe, you know, we bought two properties, you know, everybody in our family is good. Like, you know, you should, you know, go ahead and get whatever, you know, truck or car you want. And, you know, we like went through our budget and like how much the payment should be. And honestly, it's like pulling teeth. He's like, nah, let's get one more place. Let's get one more. And I'm like, cause I mean, my husband is driving, cause I was going to give away my Camry, you know, that $4,000 Camry that I bought. No, yeah. he likes fixing things up. And so he fixed it up and that's what he's driving. I'm like, babe, you can, you know, go ahead. We have, you know, we're okay now. We've reached our goals. You don't have to drive this car. And he's like, honestly, I really want for us to get a small apartment building, like anywhere from 4 to 8 units. I want to focus on that. And I'm like, wow, who are you? Because that was not the man that I met who was going to get a truck every other week. And so I love that, you know, that, you know, it's when you focus on goals about what you want to achieve versus just like kind of like the stuff that you want to have, the conversation shifts, you know?
Yep. Well, that's it awesome. For your auto loan lecture from me. hopefully that wasn't too painful. Well, I think it's something worth talking about. Maybe it's not going to crush the economy the same way the housing crisis did, but I think it's just slowly chipping away at people's potential, you know, for what they can accomplish and save and put away. And when you save, you are free. You know, you're free to make decisions. You're free to make better choices for yourself because you don't have that. You don't have to turn to debt and you don't have to, you know, stay at the job you hate if you have savings saved up. So take a look at your car statement. I'll put a link to a calculator everyone can use to kind of calculate how much they're paying on their auto loan. And, you know, feel free to send us your questions if you have questions about anything we talked about on the show. Maybe we should talk about credit card debt later or next, because let me tell you, credit card debt is also on the rise in a major, major way. People are feeling very confident in themselves in 2019. Cool.
So now that we flooded you with all of our dope car note chat, let's take some of your questions. Let's maybe just a couple, because I know we did a lot of financial
coaching.
Yes.
We won't say nagging or lecturing. we have some, you know, good little questions. So again, you guys can send us your questions. Hit us up at brownambitionpodcast.com. Okay. Or go to the
reflexes aren't where they used to be. Okay.
And hit ask us anything or shoot us an email directly at brownambitionpodcast@gmail.com. Here are a couple of questions. So here's an easy one from listener Marley. She wants to know, how do you transfer money from one bank like Bank of America to an online bank account without paying a fee?
Good one. Marks from Marley. Dope name. Lucky. I'm not going to tell you the bank that I have, the brick and mortar bank. They're the worst. Sorry. So I'll have a bank. Let's call it Mark. And so Mark Bank charges to transfer out, right? Because, you know, Mark Bank is the worst. That's what the worst does. But I also have Ally, who I love. Hey, Ally. Ally does not charge to retrieve or send money. So instead, what you could just do is go to the bank that doesn't charge. Like, typically the online only bank doesn't charge, but you definitely want to check. So whenever I'm trying to transfer money, I actually go to Ally, does the transferring for me. So Ally will go to Mark Bank and take money, or Ally will transfer money into Mark Bank, and then Mark Bank doesn't have a say because it's Ally Bank doing the work and they don't charge for that work.
Also, have you ever used Zelle?
I do. I have.
My husband and I have done this. There's been times where I needed to transfer money because we both have we have some Chase credit cards that we each have a Chase checking account too. Not that you need one, but we just happen to have one. And the way that we transfer money is, well, first of all, some banks have – but bank-to-bank transfers should be free and pretty easy to do through the app. But then a lot of these big banks all are in the Zelle network, where which allows you to send – money, like, to, so let's say Tiffany has bank ABC and I have bank XYZ. If they're both using Zelle, I can instantly transfer money to Tiffany through Zelle without incurring any fees. And Zelle is free. The only, you know, with any of these payment things, or even, you know, things like Chase Quick Pay, you just have to read very carefully the protection and make sure that you're sending protection terms and make sure that you're sending money to someone that you know. Because some of these services may not cover you in case of fraud if you've initiated the transfer yourself. That's what we found in our research. So if you're the one sending the money and you're like, oh yeah, I know this is Tiffany's email address and I got it correct, and you send it her way and it ends up not being her, ends up being a scammer who, you know, gave you her email with one letter different, then you may be on the hook or never get back those funds. So just be careful. There's all kinds of different apps. There's, I can send a list of a roundup. There's things like Pop Money that was around. I think it's still around today. There's a Circle app. There's a zillion different ways. There's good old Venmo. So if you're just trying to split the bill with a friend and you want to transfer money from your bank account to their pocket, you both have a Venmo account and then you just send the money through your account. It debits your checking account that's linked, and goes to their bank. And I use Venmo to pay, to even just give tips when I've gone to like the hair salon or something, and I don't have cash on me, I'll like Venmo them a tip. So it makes it super easy.
Look at that. See?
Yeah.
Or Apple all these Pay. All these different options. So Marley, you should be good on good.
Good on good. And here is a question from listener Kendall. Oh, she's funny. Kendall says, I've never posted a question for a podcast before. I honestly can't help but think that I shouldn't send you guys a question because you two are amazing, brown, ambitious women, and I'm not. I am a half Mexican, half Caucasian, 26-year-old stay-at-home mom. I was adopted by a white couple when I was a baby, so I've mainly identified as Caucasian my whole life. I get asked, what are you? Same. I've been told that I look exotic, which just makes me feel gross, so I've always checked Caucasian for race. I'm embarrassed by that because I feel like I should be proud of who I am. My question is actually about my finances. Oh, but let's address this first part. Honey, you don't have to feel like you're not brown enough because, you know, society has made it easier for you to move through circles by just, you know, checking that Caucasian box. But I feel you on that 100%. I think you're only 26. Like, I think it's time for you to figure out who you are and if learning more about your Mexican roots is important to you. There's so much you can do. I mentioned the Queer Eye earlier. If anyone's watched this recent season, there's actually a really good episode. Oh, you should watch this, Kendall. Go to the episode with Jess. They give this young girl in Missouri named Jess a makeover. She's an African American woman who was adopted by an African American family, but always liked things that Black people in her life told her weren't Black enough. So she liked music that they didn't like. You know, she liked rock music and that was seen as not Black enough. And she's also a lesbian, and she's gravitated toward the circle of friends who are LGBTQA and that really embrace her. But what she felt like she lost was her African American roots. And she felt like she wasn't allowed to explore her Black identity because she'd always been told by Black society or like people in her life that she wasn't Black enough. And on the show, it's really beautiful because there's a moment where one of the makeover people, Karamo, takes her to Alvin Ailey Dance Center in her neighborhood in a part of town that celebrates Black culture. and just shows her that all she has to do is start researching, start exploring things in her neighborhood, black owned businesses, black owned theater and arts events and things like that, to really start tapping into that part of her identity. And I'm on a long spiel right now, but you don't have to wait for permission to explore your Latina side at all.
Exactly. And it's awesome. Honestly, it's in addition to your Caucasian side. So, it's like double trouble, And so, it's much or as little as you feel comfortable with. At the end of the day, it's your life. You get to decide. But so I just think that that's an awesome addition. And but what's her question?
The question is, so she mentioned she's a stay-at-home mom, 26. She wants to know, what is the best way to go about saving and being financially responsible when planning for baby number two? Number two! Damn, girl.
Ooh, child. We were just talking about this earlier.
Ahead of the game.
But you know what? You're going to be like 40-something years old with grown kids and popping. Like, what? My kids are out the house. I'm about to travel even more now. So, like,
I'm a little jealous of that, to be
honest. I am. So what can she do to start preparing now?
This is a strategy that I've heard when I've done stories on the same topic, and it's to immediately start saving half your income and living off the other half. And whatever you need to do to get to a place where you can achieve that balance, that'll help you prepare for like the financial impact of having a child. And in your case, this will be your second child. So try that and see how it works. And you've already had the experience, more experience than we have, because you have a stepdaughter, but anyway, don't have first baby yet, but you maybe know what your monthly expenses have been to raise your first child. So maybe you could take a look at how much you were spending on average and your first child's, first 6 to 12 months of life, and then start getting used to setting that money aside so you have a bit of a cushion in place already before number two comes along.
Yeah, honestly, from what I understand, for parents with multiples, like, you can never save enough. And so if you can save, as much as you can, like Mandy said before, your bundle of joy, your second bundle of joy gets here, that's just going to help you. And also, too, of what I've heard from parents, because I'm one of five, is that like there's like, and I'm sure because you have your first one, it's like some magical door opens up and you figure it out, where like you're like, oh my gosh, money's so tight, how could I save, right? I've got this one, and then two comes, and somehow you're managing to feed the two. And so lean into the fact that that parents typically figure out a way. And, you don't have to wait for the baby to get here to open up that magic and say, okay, what are some things that we really don't necessarily need? Parents sometimes, especially with the first one, are typically overspending on things that the kids really don't care about as much as you think. Like, I remember when my sister has two little ones, cut off her cable. And at first she was like, oh my gosh, the kids are gonna, I'm like, first of all, the baby is like 1.5. And your oldest child is like 3. He doesn't know what cable is.
YouTube is free.
For what? And like, when I tell you, those kids are like, there's this little channel called Little Baby Bum, which is a weird name, but whatever. But they love that Little Baby Bum. And then Netflix, I gave her my Netflix password. Those kids don't know nothing about cable. So there's a lot of things sometimes I feel like that parents kind of like impose financially on their kid. Like, oh, my kid needs this. And it's like, yeah, honestly, here's the thing about kids. There's no such thing as normal. Whatever life they're living is normal. If everything in your house was pink, your kids would think pink was the way everybody lived. If you only ate broccoli all day, your kids would think everybody only eats broccoli. Like, you get to normalize what's normal. So, if you normalize frugality, your kids won't know any different until they get like to middle school and the rest of the kids are like, what, girl, you need to see a fried chicken on Fridays. That's what I found out, that people had fried chicken, because my mother was like super healthy. And I was like, what? There's skin on chicken and it's delicious? That's another.
Where are we going with this?
I know. But I say all that to say is that, like, create an environment where frugal and fun is normal, and save as much as you can.
Yes. And use those hand-me-downs from baby number one. Hope you still got them.
Yes.
Good luck, Kendall. And thanks for your question. All right, guys. Again, brandambitionpodcast@gmail.com, or hit us up at brandambitionpodcast.com with your questions.
Yeah. says, now it's time for our booster break for all the family. Will you boost? Will you break? Which one will it be, Mandy? Oh, that was a good
You should write that down for next time.
Well, you already know. It's gone already.
Mandy, we might owe royalty to Disney, but we won't. Y'all won't tell.
Are you going to boost or are you going to break?
I'm going to do a break. A brown break. Ooh. I'm having a little moment in my millennialness of just being outraged by our recycling culture, and I feel like I need to talk about it. So, of course, I try, you know, when you have a dog, as a good neighbor, you pick up when your dog goes number two in a little baggie for dogs number two is a poop bag, shall we say. And I knew I was like going to be throwing away at least 3 poop bags a day. Okay, I didn't realize it would be like 6 because Molly, I don't know what that girl eats, but she goes a lot. But these poop bags, so I decided I was going to invest in like biodegradable bags that aren't that expensive. So I got them on Amazon, but that would actually, I don't know, not hurt the environment. Just plastic. I don't know if you've read about plastic and how bad it is for any, it's winding up in oceans and it's getting stuck up turtles' nose and all kinds of stuff. Plastic is bad. I thought I was doing a good job. But then, of course, I start reading on the internets about how, first of all, some companies, if they're selling biodegradable, and this goes beyond just doggy poop bags, but like biodegradable utensils and plastic, or not plastic, but biodegradable plates and things like that, disposable things, they're not always actually composting in landfills. And they actually can be hurting landfills and being bad for the environment. And on top of that, I'm reading also research that's shown that like, not research that's shown, but did you realize in America, most of our recycling, we sell it to China, like a ton of recycling. We just sell it to China or countries overseas. And what's happening is China recently said, no, 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 ma'am. We don't have any space for America's trash anymore. Mm-hmm. So we're not buying it anymore. So where is our recycling going? You know, when we separate things in our day-to-day lives, is it really going where it's meant to be going? Is it actually being recycled, or is it ending up back in landfills? I want to know. And my 10-year-old self who watched that episode of Arthur when Francine's dad took them to the, you know, where he worked as a garbage man and showed them making playgrounds out of their trash. Like, I want to know where these playgrounds are. And I want to know that we're not just contributing to this, I don't know, this like environmental crisis. And that is my break. I have no answers. I only have, I'm just now getting woke about trash and where it actually goes.
Yeah, it's hard to watch.
I need to compost. I've heard I need to like dig a hole in my backyard, and the best way to get rid of dog business is by digging a hole in the backyard. I'm like, my backyard is not big enough. That's going to be reeking. So I don't know what to do.
But I'm awake honestly now. I remember I was part of the environmental club when I was like in middle school and high school, and I felt so hopeful, and I'm like, we're still here,
barely. I don't know. Yeah. I just feel like we're gonna have a trash reckoning, people.
Yeah, that's what I mean, that we're still here, still dealing with the same things.
So like, wow. I see.
Yeah, like I was like, wow, because you know, I was like, yay, we're doing these things, we're, you know, we're trying really hard, we're gonna see a difference, and I'm like, oh, not so much. So I have two boosts. So one boost is like a little fun one. Well, they're both fun. One, BT, Black Entertainment Television, if you're not following them on IG, you should, because they're doing this fun series called I Was a Soul Train Dancer. And it's honestly, I never thought about it. I mean, I watched Soul Train as a kid, I guess. I mean, I vaguely remember. But it's just this like a series of short documentaries on, I guess, like iconic Soul Train dancers. And honestly, it's really nice to learn about how do they get on Soul Train, what are they doing now. And it's nice because, you know, sometimes BET is not the best programming. And so what I love is like in the comments, people are reminiscing. People are like, oh, I remember that guy. It's just, so if you need a little boost, a little brown boost, actually, you know, head over to BET's IG page. It's just BET. And, you know, watch some of those videos. They've been really nice to watch. But my big brown boost goes to Jessica Nabongo. Hey, Jess. Her IG is The Catch Me If You Can. And Jessica is on her way. She just was like highlighted by Good Morning America. She is the very first Black woman to, she's going to be the very first Black woman to visit every single country. I guess she's right on the cusp right now.
What?
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Every single country.
How many countries? There's 100. Oh, okay.
195. Yep, I was about to say 195 countries. And I just think that that's really cool. I've been following her on IG, and I honestly, her pictures are obviously, you know, just gorgeous. And yeah, I'm just, it's just really cool to see someone who has taken travel kind of like to the next level, and that she'll be the first Black woman to do this, you know?
I'm so jealous. That's awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome, right? And I was just like, so, yep, that's just like, yeah. I was like, look at Jessica.
What's that's her, really if you awesome. Catch me if you can?
It's the Catch Me If You Can.
The Catch Me If You Can. Dope.
Mm-hmm. I will, like, you'll love her pictures.
Vicariously through.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. People are so crazy. I'm looking at the comments. Someone was like, why is she the first Black woman? Why not just the first woman? Ridiculous. Someone was like, what do you mean? A white woman probably already visited every country. Yeah. Now, I mean, sometimes people are really looking for, like, oh my gosh.
Because it's,
like,
not accurate.
I mean, like, it's like, girl, because someone already did it who was not Black.
It would only be offensive if someone wrote the headline, Black woman visits every country.
Yes.
Then so why has she got to be Black?
I was going to say, clearly, I mean, that's what it's implying to me. I'm not for sure, but it's implying to me that there was a white woman, maybe a Spanish woman or somebody else who has already done that. So we're, you know, making the emphasis because she's the first Black woman. I don't know what it is about people who are non-Black, not people, everyone, but there are certain people who are non-Black who get so offended when you actually say the word Black. I'm like, why?
Oh, we don't see color, and that's why.
I know, I'm colorblind, except for at night when I'm clutching my purse. Girl, sit down. She said, why does she have to be the first Black woman? Because she's a Black woman. So yeah, that's my boost for Jessica, and then also for BET for actually doing right by us. You know, like, I want to see, like, Black history kind of, like, fun, like, things like that on your IG and on your network. We don't need to watch Baby Boy one more time, even though I don't even watch BET like that because of the programming. But it would be nice to see things like that because I'm telling you, these have been really nice, like, fun videos to kind of, like, look back with nostalgia on what was, you know?
Maybe I should follow BET on Instagram. I can't say that I do. I did watch Soul Train, though.
Oh, see? Right? The dances. I'm like,
probably all of us have, like, an uncle or an aunt removed or something like that who was on Soul Train.
I'm like, really? I don't think I did, but that would be funny. Maybe, and I've never asked before.
Just, you never know. You never know. All right.
Well, it's been an awesome show, Mandra, as per usual.
I mean, are you getting ready for your time off? What are we going to do without you?
You are going to have some guest hosts who are going to slay.
Okay.
Yes, guys, I'm going to be taking 2 weeks off just to, like, woo side. Like, so I'm trying to not even trying. My team's already let me know they're going to lock me out of everything, which honestly I need. Like, I don't have any, like, major plans in place. I'll try to at least go somewhere new and different, but maybe some massages, a pedicure, because my feet are definitely winter feet right now, which is not a cute look.
Ooh, winter feet, all caps. Yeah.
Hashtag oh no. Yeah, just like, in, you know, just to relax. And it will be, because usually, like, even if I take, like, the day off or half a day, I'm still thinking about, ooh, tomorrow I got to do XYZ, you know? Well, and so this will be nice not to think that.
Yeah, and you'll come back fresher and better than ever. So, mm-hmm. You guys, don't worry. I got y'all. We are going to have some incredible guest hosts joining us the first couple of episodes of April. Let me see. I've confirmed them so I can share. We're going to have our favorite, what do we call her? Our fairy money godmother, Lynette.
Yeah, that's fairy godmother. Yeah,
the money coach. The money coach herself, Lynette Califani-Cox, who I think still has one of our most popular episodes ever, where we talked about negotiating and asking for more at work. So Lynette's going to be joining us. And also we'll have, for the first time, Sandy Smith, who is the founder of Yes, I Am Cheap, which is a personal finance blog. Sandy is, like, the ultimate hustle queen, I feel like. Holds down a 9-to-5 job, but has all these side hustles and has been, we've been trying to have her on the show forever, I feel like. So
yeah.
I think you guys are going to love you some Sandy if you're not also following her.
Everyone loves some Sandy. She's so awesome.
Tells it like it is. Hilarious. Can't wait to have her on. So we're in good hands, you guys. Don't worry. Don't go ghosting me without Tiffany. It'll still be a great show while Tiff gets some much needed rest and relaxation.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the PS first.
Something you should know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.